we know SFU is a colonial institution, so there's just so many practices in place that we don't even consider sometimes impact Indigenous students. But I also don't want to like completely roast the university because they do employ me.
That is Audrey Heath.
Well, hi, everyone.
She's a graduate of SFU's School of Communication, and she now works at the SFU Indigenous Student Center as an Indigenous Student Life Coordinator.
On my dad's side, my family comes from the Gitxsan Nation, which is up in northern BC. On both sides, ex-European ancestry from Scotland and France. I just recently graduated from SFU with my Bachelor of Arts, double majoring in both communication and Indigenous studies. I am now a staff member at SFU, so continuing on that journey.
One thing that's intriguing about Audrey's story is how she discovered her passion and the shape that took in the transition between her studies and career. For Audrey, it all comes down to community and what it really means to not just choose it, but to build it from the ground up. Can you kind of like run us through this journey of going from like what drew you to this particular field of study and then in recognize wanted to create this role and how did you actually achieve that?
When I started off at SFU, I kind of just stuck to my studies, went to class, did what any good student would do, but I guess very lonely in that. So I got more involved in student groups, started exploring my passions, and kind of took opportunities where they came. Started working at the Indigenous Student Center in a co-op role, so that was the Communications Program Assistant.
Co-op is a work placement program offered by SFU where you can apply work experience in a field like to explore, usually for 4 to 8 months at a time.
So then I was running our social media channels and bi-weekly newsletters. I did that for 2 semesters, and typically when people do co-op, it's 3 different terms in 3 different organizations or institutions. But I was like, nope, I found a place that I love working, an amazing team of people, and I stuck with it. So I was the communications program assistant for 2 years, and I had actually grown that position so much that more work that had to be done than one person can do.
Audrey had found her calling. And that's when she got the inspiration to do what not many other students have done. She created and proposed her own.
So I pitched the idea of this special projects role to my boss. So the communications program role is really meant to promote Indigenous Student Center programs to Indigenous students within the university, programs and supports to help each other. But the education that can be done for non-Indigenous students. And the special projects role looks at those bigger picture ideas and educating folks across campus. So throughout that semester, there are a couple key events, such as the Women's Memorial March in downtown Vancouver. In May, we have Red Dress Day, and then leading into June with Indigenous Peoples Month, we hosted some events, some arts live where we had performers come. We did an Indigenous market to display works by talented artists where you could come purchase items. So just spreading awareness about those types of events.
I'm interested to know what at the very beginning, like when you started your communications degree, did you start knowing I want to do communications and Indigenous studies? Or was it sort of like you made these discoveries?
Yeah, I feel like I have 2 different stories here. The first part is I think a few years ago I thought back and I'm like, I've always worked with like Indigenous youth. Like I used to be a for Indigenous youth.
Oh, wow.
I used to be a part of, at the time it was called the Aboriginal Youth Leadership Council. And it didn't even click until like way after I started working at the center. It's like, this is what you've always done. Like, why didn't you want to go to like take Indigenous studies from the beginning? Like, So yeah, it just seems to be what I've always done, supporting Indigenous students. The one moment where it kind of clicked for me, it was during COVID. As a student, I was in an Indigenous Student Center workshop in what we call cultural connections, and we were making bannock virtually. So we were all at home in our kitchens and we were just talking as people do. And I mentioned how I was looking into going into co-op And I wasn't sure what it was yet that I was going to do. Maybe work with the BC Lions. That was my first thought because I saw somebody else who did that. And I was like, that's cool. I like sports. And then at the time, Lisa, she was like, hey, well, actually, our communications program assistant is leaving at the end of the semester. Mm. We weren't originally going to repost for it, but is that something you'd be interested in? And I was like, gosh, yes. Like, that's, you know, communications, that's my thing. I'd love to. I'm totally interested. And I've been there ever since. Hmm. Never went to do that co-op with the BC Line, even though I told myself I was going to.
Right. So I like, yeah, I really love this idea of, and it's something that I also have noticed in my own artistic life of discovering, oh, I've always done this kind of thing. And I just now I'm recognizing that mm-hmm. this has been a consistent part of my life.
Yeah.
And the arts have been part of Audrey's life as well, as she took the lead in designing the Indigenous Student Center's social media posts and also took up beadwork, which she teaches to students interested in connecting with that part of their culture.
I really appreciate the setting that I'm in my office and in my community, that I'm able to explore all these different things, these intersecting things of my artwork and my, I guess, advocacy. So I actually learned to bead at the Indigenous Student Center.
Oh, cool.
Back in 2021. So just, it's like a big full circle moment of now I'm teaching beadwork classes to our new students.
Currently, Audrey shares the office with five other fellow Indigenous Student Life coordinators, each with their own programs and priorities. Audrey gave me a breakdown of three of her own.
One of my main priorities is our communication. So even though I've moved on to my role as Indigenous Student Life coordinator, I've still kept that comms piece with me. So I run our social media channels and our newsletter. So I really just want to make sure that our programs and supports for our students are getting promoted and students know what's fully available to them, because sometimes they don't know. And it's like, I could have been using this whole time, like, and I didn't know. So that's, yeah, one of my main things. Mm. And then my second part is as the Elders Program Coordinator. So there's two parts to that. We have six elders in residence, and I'll have them come in for workshops and events to get connected with our students. And then externally, folks across the university also would like to have elders at their events to do openings and start off a. So I'm the executive assistant almost for all our elders, getting those coordinated. And then finally, I put on my hat as an events coordinator and starting to plan for our Indigenous Student Center honoring feast in June, where we can congratulate all the Indigenous graduates for the past year, myself included, actually. So
are there any particular like events or moments, you could say, where you're like, I'm doing what I really love doing, or like whether it's like a particular person or a group of people that you could see the support making an impact, or a program that just like really is going well and you're looking around and like, right, this feels right for me?
I think for me, one of the most impactful programs that I've worked with is the Elders Program. Mm-hmm. So quite often during the week, I'll get to sit down and just visit with our elders, also an opportunity for students with them as well. So I get to kind of be a part of those situations where, you know, a student's had a rough day and the elders there to kind of created that connection where they're able to do that and have those supports.
Mm. Is it sort of like they gather and the elders teach skill and knowledge, or like what is the actual like stuff that people are doing?
Yeah, it's different for each elder depending on what skills they have.
Yeah.
So we have Elder Moran. She'll come in for her tea talks every Monday. She sits in the elders' room and she's there to chat, be a listening ear. She's really passionate about the environment, so if you ever want to talk about with her, she's your go-to person. And then we have Auntie Patty, who will come in and bead with students every Wednesday. So I got to do that today. And I, you know, I'm at work, but I'm sitting here beading, something I love doing. We do a lot of beading around the ISC. Our floor is always covered with loose beads.
Right.
And then we have a couple of our newer elders, like Eeyore. Russell Wallace, who are drummers, and they can share their songs and those types of teachings with students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I imagine so rich, especially for students who might have not come from a family background to mm-hmm. to have connected with elders or with that kind of knowledge.
Yeah.
I want to talk about education then. Okay. Let's talk about education.
Yeah.
Because I've seen you write about this in your blog posts, and it seems like such a central net about. And I'm sure there's lots of debate around like what is a effective means of education and what is that what does that role look like? What does a culture of educating each other look like? But also, whose job is it to educate, and what labor that encompasses?
Yeah. So within our center, that's not necessarily one of our main goals. Our main goal is to support Indigenous students. So that's why I kind of saw that this educational piece was missing. Typically in our office, we'll redirect people to the Indigenous Studies Department or the Indigenous Education Office, as they have the best resources to help educate, or if you're interested in taking classes. But yeah, people were always coming to us at the Indigenous Student Center. I was like, this is something that we should talk about. So I had this designated role to be able to share these on an accessible platform in, I guess, a digestible way for folks. It might come across better. So kind of that's what I wanted to do.
I'm curious about like the ways that we make community in environments or cultures where community is like hard to make. And that could be anything from like family to a close circle of friends or colleagues or like people you work with. Because I've found that, especially moving, because I'm a rural kid. I grew up mm-hmm. rural, where everything was just kind of communal, whether you wanted it to be or not. You know, everyone knew each other. And I was like, oh, I can't wait to get away. And then I come to the big city and I realize how kind of everyone's in their own little bubble of sorts, or like a very small, like closely knit, tightly knit community that's very, very small. And there isn't that much sense of like unity. And I'm looking around, and I'm like, what are the conscious ways that we can try to create community or be better community builders or community? Because I realize it's not like a skill that we've ever really been taught. Would you agree? Like, what's your feeling on that?
I mean, our go-to at the center to bring community together is food.
Oh my God. Speaking my language.
Everyone loves food. We have our kitchen where we get catering for students, and especially for students, you know, you're busy studying. Sometimes you'll forget to eat, you know, you're rushing between classes.
Oh, all the time. Me today.
Yeah. So having food available for students brings them into our space. You know, we get to see them and travel. And then we've also started having monthly lunches. So we invite all of our elders and knowledge keepers up to campus, and we'll invite Indigenous students, staff, and faculty. So that's also giving students a chance to work and see what opportunities are out there. Mm. So bringing together people with food is our go-to.
That makes so much sense. So yeah, so food, and you also mentioned like networking or like just like connecting with a diverse group of people. Is the goal there to feel like let's try to bring in people from different like experiential backgrounds or generations or something like that?
Yeah, each month we'll typically have a different faculty or program host the lunch, so that right. way students are learning about the different opportunities campus.
Right. Like if they're thinking like, oh, I don't know I haven't picked my major yet. Mm-hmm. And so yeah. Now they can actually get like connected and face to face with the people who are actually doing many different things. That makes lots of sense. Mm-hmm. Any other good strategies for building community?
I think being just accessible in as many different ways as possible, students where they're at, whether that's being available over the phone, over email, in person at the center. So just being flexible.
Mm. Yeah, I vibe with. Okay, we're going to do a little gear shift here. I guess like with community on the mind, thinking of community, I think a lot of students heard about decolonization. They've heard about truth and reconciliation. And what I've seen in your blog post here is talking about indigenization and mobilizing Indigenous knowledge. And I'm curious, like, what is the difference for you between decolonization and indigenization, and what are some ways that you mobilize indigenous knowledge systems? What does that look like in a room to see that?
Yeah, I mean, generally, I think people throw these words like decolonization and reconciliation and indigenization around a lot, but nobody knows what they mean. But I guess my one thing that I like to think of is lots of people say they want to indigenize a space. And I'm like, you can't before you decolonize a safe space for indigenous peoples. So within our office specifically, we don't actually have to work because it's a space full. We are already like just the work itself is working towards like lifting up indigenous voices, supporting indigenous students. But yeah, when we interact, I guess, across the university, there are definitely things that we need to kind of break down those walls and make things more accessible for students.
And as far as spaces of like, how do we make a space safe before we indigenize it? What does that look like?
Yeah, so I mean, let's call it what it is. Like, yeah. SFU was built by colonizers.
Yeah.
It's a colonial institution, very set in its ways, and we need to recognize that. Examples of we have our indigenous students who may have traveled here to go to school from their rural reserves. So giving space and time for that, if they need to go home for a ceremony, we need to be graceful with that. If they need extensions or whatnot, sometimes they don't have the money to travel home, so having different bursaries available for those purposes. Yeah, that's just kind of one example.
No, absolutely. It's hard to maybe imagine all the steps that need to be taken, but maybe not, like between now and where you think you could get to, is that you'd really like to see SFU implement even outside the scope of your own work, right? Like, what are some ways that you think that SFU could further decolonize or indigenize and be a safer space for indigenous students?
I guess smaller thinking for my center, our goal is to have an elder in every day of the week, annexable during our business hours for students. So that's kind of like one goal that we have. Bigger goals, I'd say being intentional about celebrating and honoring different indigenous events. And I wouldn't call them holidays, because some of them are to honor and mourn. But just making sure there's good recognition of those and there is somebody in place to do that work so that all the emotional labor isn't on Indigenous peoples.
Yeah, absolutely. In thinking about where you've come from and recognizing that you've always kind of been doing this kind of work and that it's very fulfilling, and as we're like looking with utopian goggles into the future of like what kind of better community builders we can be, I'd like to ask this, what I call a hauntological question of what is it that you cannot stop thinking of, past, present, or future? And it could be something that is haunting you, or it could be something that that's more exciting, like that you're working towards.
I think something that I think about is kind of the experience of Indigenous students in the classroom, because sometimes it can be very harmful, actually. And that isn't necessarily always the professor's fault. If, you know, somebody who's just not educated on Indigenous issues could ask a question, and it can be very harmful. And as someone who, yes, I'm Indigenous, but I'm white passing, so I didn't really kind of run into these issues of racism in the classroom for me. But hearing the stories of what other people have had to go through, it's like, why is this still happening today? And like, how can we fix it? Yeah, we want to educate everyone as much as possible, but some people, I guess, still don't listen, still don't understand.
Right. And are you thinking of like other students, peers, or are you thinking of like professors, or just kind of everyone?
It can be all of the above. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's a professor who might not understand the situation fully. Sometimes it could be a student asking an ignorant question, which they don't recognize. It's going to be harmful. Or sometimes people like to play devil's advocate when really...
Right. Oh, no.
That can be harmful to our Indigenous students.
As if the devil needs more advocates.
Yeah.
Right. And this sort of brings us back to this, like, of education and what does it mean mm-hmm. to educate? Because we can, you know, offer events or programs, but there might be many students or professors who look at that and say, oh, that's not for me. I don't need to go do that. I don't need to think about that because that's for Indigenous students. Or like they might think I know enough about that or something. What are ways that you can reach people who say harmful things or make these like microaggressions?
One thing that I've kind of brought up before is what if everyone had to take Indigenous studies
right.
as like kind of a breadth course, mm-hmm. but also recognizing, you know, Indigenous studies is a small department. They couldn't handle teaching everyone right. at the university. But also now that that's a forced course, people are going to, you know, go into it kind of not wanting to be there. Right. I think you really have to want to be open to learning about it to make that change yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how do we get them to show up? Is it the food? Is we just go back to food? Like
always, that's always the answer. I feel like, of course, I want everyone to learn these things and have an understanding that these are Indigenous lands and kind of just a base knowledge of kind of how they're speaking about these issues. But I'm also a realist where it's like, if people don't want to listen, they're not going to listen.
Right, yeah.
So it's kind of that kind of tears, you know, back and forth of where that's going to go. For me, it's like I'm surrounded every day by Indigenous peoples and these knowledges of what I've shared and just these understandings. And then when I guess, go out into the real world and talk to other people, like, for example, I guess at Clubs Day, we'll have a booth and like to get a candy or something, we'll ask, what are the host nations? What are the three territories that we are seated on right now? And people have no idea. And to me, it's just like such a common thing to know. Like everyone's hearing it every day at their lectures or mm-hmm. you know, land acknowledgements have become such a kind of robotic part of everything. Yeah. So, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Bringing it back to like bubbles of like, it's easy for us to find our like community or micro community. And then when we like go outside that to be like, oh, right, this language is not universal for everyone. And people have to choose to come in and learn about it.
Yeah. I'm sure there'll be events happening in June for Indigenous Peoples Month, which is only a few months away. A great chance to go out in community and educate mm-hmm. yourself.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Before we said goodbye, Audrey, some final words of an to SFU undergrads who might still be searching for their calling.
For me, it was always like you go to school and then you get this big job afterwards. 4 years, 4 classes a day. That's what everyone thinks when they think undergrad at university. Mm-hmm. And to me, I did not take that path. So I'm just kind of here to show people that everyone's journey looks different. I did that for 2 years, took my classes. And then I was like, you know, I want to get more involved, find out what I'm passionate about. And I took opportunities where they came. I would take less classes for a semester while I worked, or take the semester off and work and then come back to class and then take a leave from work. So it was like a lot of back and forth. But because I was working at the university and studying at the university, just so many paths like were woven to me. Mm-hmm. It was a really smooth transition from student life to work life. I do say I appreciate the 9 to 5, where after 5, I don't have to think about studying or homework. And I can just go do whatever I want to do. Opportunities like this. Everyone's journey is different. An opportunity, take it. If you are an Indigenous student listening, come drop by the Indigenous Student Center.
Education, community, equity, Colonization, indigenization, these are not tokens, I've learned. They are processes. They are both personal, they require consistency, curiosity, creativity, and probably good food. Nourishment, let's say. No movement can grow without action, and no institution or beyond challenge and... Audrey also made me see some parallels between neocolonialism and ableism, which makes sense, even though they're not parallel at all. The latter is, in fact, contained within the former. I thought a lot about colonial time and patience and expectations, particularly the expectation on Indigenous people to put in all the labor to educate. That is also part of Audrey's job, but that means that the least settlers like myself can do is show up and learn. I also the students that she advocates for and lifts up. The students she places in relationship to elders, mobilizing cultural knowledge, which sometimes looks like beads all over the floor. Personal knowledge, Audrey had heard. The idea that when an opportunity arises, ask yourself if you have been preparing for it already without knowing. Yes, you are all here at SFU to learn things that you have never learned before, but you have also already been learning a lot. And you have developed proficiencies, tastes, and above all, values. If you aren't sure what it is you want to do yet, trust that you probably already care about something. You already love doing certain kinds of things. They might just seem so familiar to you that you don't realize it. I'm Torin Caffarata. Thanks for dropping by after school.
Thank you to Audrey Heath and Torian Caffarata for sharing their thoughtful conversation on decolonization, community building, and not being afraid to do the thing you've always loved. You can visit the Indigenous Student Center on the Burnaby campus, room AQ 2002, from Monday to Friday, 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. This is our final episode of Season 3, so on behalf of myself and the Intercast team, thank you for joining us after school. FCAT After School is produced by Emma Jean, Torian Caffarata, and Stephanie Werner. With help from Stu Pop, Tessa Perkins, we respectfully acknowledge the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Katsi, Kwikwetlem, Kakite, Kwantlen, Semiawasan peoples, on whose unceded traditional territories our three campuses reside, and where many of the stories shared in our series take place. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to leave us a rating and subscribe to FCAT After School wherever you listen to podcasts. You can follow us on social media at FCAT at SFU. That's F-C-A-T at SFU across all platforms. For feedback or guest suggestions, reach us by email at FCATENG at SFU.ca. All links in the show notes.
Welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, April 19th, 2024. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free ones. This week on Rob.